let me indicate that we too received the information very late. In fact, it arrived when we were in our Congress last week. But out of understanding the role of Parliament, we decided that we're going to attend irrespective of the time constraints. Chair, before proceeding, let me raise one issue, Chair, that I think that you must take it up. The issue around acid mine water drainage. It's critical. Even the process that you are told is to be engaged at a certain level, water level. The issue about water treatment. The water treatment on its own, we are not told that it's not a solution, but it is a mitigation. It's a mitigation on treating water before you allow water to be dispensed off. The solution that we think that is critical to the process is desalination, but we are told that it's quite expensive. Quite expensive. We think that you must take that issue very critically. Even this treated water, treated as it is, its salt levels are still very high, because in the process of treatment you're going to use salt to treat that water. So as you're treating it, you are again contaminating the same water that you're treating in the process. Within that time, you must take that process very seriously. With the presentation from the Department of Labor, we have indicated, Chair, that we are okay in terms of progress on payment of salaries. But one thing that we must also raise, Chair, is that of late, the Department of Labor has taken the matter very seriously compared to the previous time, where you would have to move up and down within the department. It showed you very well on this process. But it's quite interesting, Chair, that in South Africa, a mine worker who fails to pay an account for 3 months is taken to a credit bureau and blacklisted. And that an employer who fails to pay a mine worker's salary due to a mine worker would have to be taken to court by government. That the Department of Labor must work on behalf of workers, go to court, and the Department of Labor must prove on behalf of workers that indeed this particular employer owes these workers, when in actual fact the employer knows that they failed to pay salaries of workers owed by them. In actual fact, Chair, there was a question as to whether this has been, are we going to expect the same arrangement? This one has been the most clumsiest liquidation that we've ever dealt with of our systems. You would have dealt with liquidations where workers at the time would have been paid and the company would be due for liquidation, but this one, and they had to owe workers salaries, monthly salaries, on monies that they've worked for. Within that, Chair, that Parliament is an institution that deals with legislation. And Parliament must rise on this one. That this must be made a criminal offence. It must be made a criminal offence for any employer in South Africa, not only in mining, in South Africa, who owes workers' salaries. Because the same workers we're talking about, almost all of them are now blacklisted because they had failed to carry their commitments in terms of debt that they had incurred, because at that time they were not paid. The person who had not paid them we still have not paid most of them in this instance. So the Department of Labor must go to court and prove when the person knows that he has not paid the workers. We think that this one, this element of allowing employers to owe workers who do not owe employers who have contributed with their labor power but they have not been paid by those employers, this element must be criminalized. Must be criminalized. We will explain as we're going further on this one. With the issue that you said you must come up for, we will, even on issues that pertain to liquidators, we'll only comment on where we were briefed, and that nobody is going to ask us why we told Parliament this and that. We'll stand for that because we had a briefing on that one. The only problem, Chair, is that there seems to be a problem of information availability or saturation between liquidators or joint provincial liquidators and then the discussions they have with potential buyers in this instance. So you would be told of the confidentiality of the information on business transactions. Now they use that language, Chair, that the information is confidential on business transactions. Fortunately, none of them have ever picketed during the process of the development on information being that particular information they don't want it to be disclosed. So we're working on the basis of an information chosen to be given out selectively, of course, on the basis of the pretext of the confidentiality on the information. Our last brief, Chair, around OPNI was that OPNI's current company that is doing maintenance and care, the last time we were briefed, we were told that its contract is coming to an end on the 31st of May. 31st of May might be tomorrow. We're not sure what would happen from that. And that we were told of the potential buyers of the companies being the Chinese African Precious Mining Check, preferred bidder on that one. And that we are also told about the process of the requirements for licensing through the Department of Mineral Resources and, of course, under Section 11 of MPRDA. And the last time we were told that this company was to assume responsibility on the 1st of June. So that's the last information we had on OPNI. But what we are proud of is that in the process there's a memorandum of understanding that should the company be in operation at any time, there's going to be first a process of recall. For those that were in its employment, they will be given a first opportunity before recruitment is extended to everybody. But we also understand that most of the workers that were in OPNI are currently employed around in the mines. That's the advantage part. For those that could not be recruited by other mines, there's going to be a process of a recall. Within that, Chair, this process of recall is not a selective employment. It's an emphasis on our side that there's a difference between creating new jobs and jobs that were in existence and that they were destroyed in the process by brutality of capital. That's why we argue for a recall first. Because there's a difference in terms of understanding the plight of unemployment between a person who has been unemployed and a person who used to have an employment and has to be frustrated in the process by liquidation. In actual fact, I would argue at the end that within that the Insolvency Act must be amended and consistent with liquidation. We're not friendly to workers nor to development. Around Hot Flake Chair, we were also also informed that a company that was a preferred bidder to take over on this one. But this company had made a condition that if they do that, they would do mining at a different opposite direction on the basis of the current problems faced by the mine and flooding. So that's an operational matter that the litigators and the Department of Mineral Resources will have to deal with the company. To the same company, we're told that they're going through the process of licensing with the Department of Mineral Resources, from the chair. But what we want to also raise is that the security now on the property being the mine has at least been improved, Chair. Has at least been improved. Because you are a portfolio committee of mineral resources, you must take it very seriously. When DMR comes to the portfolio committee, then they say, because there's no longer mining procedure, there's nothing that was doing in that site. You must ask them a question as to, in the instance that you do not have supervision by a government department very tight, what are the consequences? Because each time there's an ownerless or derelict mine, government is drawn in to now take the responsibility on behalf of the previous employer who could not be traced. Just close to the same area in Israel, a schoolboy had to lose his life because of that, as it was raining, flipping over and falling into an old mine shaft, which nobody thought that it was still open to take a life of a person. And if that situation happened, it means therefore that the Department of Mineral Resources must be very strict and clear on its responsibilities, even if a mine is not operational. Because at a time you get a problem, it is the same department that people look into in the process. So I think that process must be monitored by the committee. Again, Chair, on this one, there's also a memorandum of recall. So in the two operations, both Horsley and Orkney, when they became operational, the first opportunity for employment would be given to those workers that were previously affected. On the issue of Aurora Empowerment System, Chair, we are not involved in that. We are only told, we have an information after that, that there's a process underway dealing with the main company called Aurora Empowerment System, Chair. But what we could raise here, we'll explain later when we begin, what we think that Parliament must do. First, Chair, we have said that we think that Insolvency Act should be amended. Workers should be the first ones to be in line for payment under any circumstances for liquidation. Currently, it's investors and not workers. In actual fact, in the current system, workers are counted equal like machinery when there's liquidation. When you are told that the mine is sold as a going concern, you must know that you are counted under going concern as workers. It's assumed that you are close to machinery in that process. The second one, Chair, that we think that it must be dealt with. It's an experience, very bitter experience that we have seen with this liquidation, where liquidation has an impact on social status of kids and not families. That because your father is liquidated, so in school you must be given a letter that you now owe the school, so you either face a reality of being chased out in school if you can't pay, or something must be done to secure your position in life. Chair, this is how brutal the capital system could be. That the unemployment of the breadwinner has an impact socially to kids who necessarily would have not known or understood what liquidation means. So in this instance, Chair, we think that amendments to that act must include a process where education of kids is not compromised by the processes of liquidation. The second one, Chair, is around SASSA. You see, where workers are to leave from hand to mouth, and that unions must be the ones mobilizing for food to assist them. We think that, Chair, there's a portion in the Act that provides for emergency relief in terms of social care. But this portion depends on either the will of the minister or the will of the departmental head. You would find that it was not difficult to broker an agreement, though it took a long time in Northwest, whereas it would have been difficult to do the same in Gauteng. So you're dealing with one government. So in Northwest, with SASSA, it's easy to agree that these workers who qualify as South African citizens could be assisted through emergency relief grants. It's not a problem. But very difficult to agree with the same government in Gauteng, where you must move up and down. So I think that there must be a standard recognition in terms of emergency social grants and this process. The worst one being supply of water and electricity in hostels. It's not by that, because these workers who are not in hostels, you can bet me, 60% of them are not home. They're not home. They've acted on the over-responsibility of local government on where they are close to in terms of squatter camps, because it would have been made very difficult for them to stay in hostels, because there's no water, there's no electricity. How would you stay in a hostel where there's no water, there's no electricity? What are you going to do? So the best way for them is to reintegrate themselves back to the nearest communities where you would find sheds. So in a shed, you don't need the electricity to survive, you know, that. You don't need water. But in a mine, as by design, you are compelled to need electricity and you are compelled to need water. So in this instance, it's not by their choice that they are no longer in hostels. Remember, some of them have been in those hostels for more than 20 years. It can be an issue that now, after 20 years, your first choice is to leave the hostel and go to a squatter settlement adjacent to you. It's by force that through the cut of water supply and electricity, you have no other option. And that also adds on the burden responsibility of government, because at a particular given time, it is going to be the responsibility now of local government to supply them with water and electricity, because they would have stayed in a particular defined area for a particular period. So the liquidation has a direct impact to service delivery by government in that instance. Within that must be addressed, Chair. The other issue, Chair, within that we must raise is this one that I raised on blacklisting. That our view as a union, Chair, is that anyone who owns a company, now we're talking about mining, whose company has been liquidated through the process of the liquidation, that this particular company must be blacklisted as a company. That's one. But two, the directors or owners must be blacklisted. Remember the furore raised by the Aurora directors, where they celebrate making money elsewhere, still in mining, when in actual fact, they have failed to pay salaries of mine workers in this system. So we are arguing that one, they must be blacklisted as a company. It means they have failed beyond reasonable doubt to prove that they can run a successful mining company. That's the first one. Secondly, they must be blacklisted as directors so that they're not allowed to be directors in other companies still in the same sector. Why allow them to operate other mines when in actual fact they've plunged the same industry into chaos in this instance? Within that chair, on this one, we will call for tight regulations on this one. In actual fact, this is at the core of the problem, because you find that these liquidations sometimes are deliberately made by directors. You find a director liquidated in a particular company, but the same director on the same month declaring profits on another company similar to that one, but the difference is that the companies are registered differently. So our argument is that they be blacklisted and not be allowed for the rest of their lives, so that people take these things very seriously. That if you run an operation, it should not go to a situation where it is liquidated, because that liquidation has an impact to you as a professional business person. Within that chair, that must be taken up. The other issue, chair, that you must assist us on is the office of the master. That of sometimes dereliction of duties and abandoning his duties to the liquidators in terms of consultation of creditors. There are times where these companies would secretly go, the processes that goes to the liquidator's office would not be known by the creditors. You would be told of the decision that in actual fact they had a presentation to the master's office, and that something was allowed to be like that. The last one, which we could not write, but it was raised here, Chair. The chair of Comrade Sondos was asking about health in process. Within that, you must consider in the process of developing standard operation procedures for mining liquidations between labor, DMR, water affairs, and health. So that in the process that you are faced with a similar situation of a liquidation in a mining industry, we do not ask what is the Department of Labor, what is the Department of Health, what is the Department of Mineral Resources. It's defined in a standard operation procedure. All what you would know is that at that particular time, each department would know its responsibility, Chair. That's all what we have until today, Chair, in this process.
Thank you very much, Emmanuel. Honorable members, there you've got the presentation from Emmanuel, based on their experience on this matter of Aurora.
The labor had said that the 1,287 or something people would have received some compensation. Now there's a big majority that is not hasn't received anything. I was hoping that the union was going to try and explain that situation. Where are these people? How can they be contacted? And how are they surviving?
Honorable
Sondos.
Thank you,
Chair.
Chairperson, I think Honorable Lucas has read my mind. I was going to ask, let me amplify it. On the basis of a government and the employer not being sure about the numbers and the whereabouts of these workers, don't you think it's also partly your responsibility just to assist us in terms of understanding exactly how many workers are we talking about, what kind of compensation in terms of figures are we looking at, on the basis of the calculations that we make. I thought we were going to come to the part on that one. Secondly, I think I personally agree with you as the union on the question of what is this of blacklisting. As an individual, you get blacklisted without even knowing that you are blacklisted. You don't know. You know it when you are raging credit that you are blacklisted. Why does that not apply the same with companies as directors? I think on that one we need to look at that, and I agree with you. Person needs to be blacklisted as an individual and as a company, so that we stop this criminality that is taking place within, especially the mining industry. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think you've raised quite fundamental issues in terms of parliamentary intervention that you are seeking. One of those is what Honorable Sondra has spoken to. On this issue of Insolvency Act, you're not raising it with us for the first time, and also other entities such as Solidarity have agreed with you on what needs to be done, but to take the process forward, let me pose it as a question. Would you be in a position to present to the committee areas within the Insolvency Act that you would want to see changed, so that we can, in our powers as this portfolio of mineral resources, engage our counterparts in DTI, so that such amendments can be considered at some stage? And also whether you have engaged DTI yourselves to raise the matters of necessary amendments to the Insolvency Act, as you are alluding to us here. If you are amenable, yes, we would like to see those possible amendments submitted to us, so that we can then be able, as I indicated, take the process forward. And the other matter is to do with the supply of water and reconnection of electricity. I don't know if there has been any engagement with the local government in the areas where these mines are, or whether the electricity was supplied by the mines themselves in this instance. If so, the processes that are underway in those two mines of care and maintenance, obviously, they need some energy. Now, whether the mines are refusing to reconnect water and electricity to those hostels where workers are staying. And if not the mines, the local government authority, whether they are amenable to supplying water. Of course, if it would be in the, within the ambit of the local government situation, they would also want assurance that such water supply, such electricity supply, will be paid for. And maybe the problem would be who's going to pay, because these workers are unemployed in the street, even though they are within the premises of the mines. But clarify to us whose responsibility was it before, at the stage when the mines were operational, to supply water and electricity in those systems. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. The last one, Chair. Said before all this problem, you would understand that Aurora owned Eskom and owned water supply before it failed to pay salaries of workers. So the process of water cut and electricity cut occurred even before the actual liquidation. Perhaps it's the reason why in hot say it would be easy to come to a close to conclusive number of the workers involved compared to Pamuzi, if someone is from a class of attorney. That the Pamuzi situation was in two folds. Remember, there was Pamuzi Free State, which could not be included in this process of liquidation, but there was two processes applied in Pamuzi. There was a process of reduction of the workforce, which applied to Free State and Clarksville. So there was a sizable number of workers, who some of them were retrenched in the process, earlier than the process of liquidation. So the issue about the exact number would be difficult there. In actual fact, the number that Department of Labor had in OPNI has been an agreed upon number that was submitted jointly with them. That's what we could account for, that we have as a number. Now the fluctuation is that some workers who might not necessarily been affected by the liquidation, when they are told that there's money due for mine workers, the same situation with ex-mine workers, those that would have been paid their money would still come back and claim on the basis that they are told that the money that they could not get, that they must get. That's why in the court play you would find the 468 numbers later in this process, which has to go for verification. All what we're fighting for between ourselves and the Department of Labor to get was to get a court order that says pay. When the court order says pay, then the issue of the numbers could then be finalized on the basis of the list that you have that could be verified, and then those that would come later in the process and claim some of them not legitimate and some of them legitimate in the process. But internally in the union, I'm sure the Department of Labor would have to check that. We have an entity called Mine Workers Development Agency. They're running a tracing service. They have a tracing service for both Lesotho, Mozambique, and internally in South Africa. And the reason why we have that entity in the union is on the grounds that it has been difficult sometimes to trace the mine workers, either for compensation or to trace their living standards when they've been deported back to their homeland. So in that process, MDA is capable of running a process called tracing. They trace them in all the rural areas, perhaps the Department of Labor could link up with the Mine Workers Development Agency before this process. And I think that to the portfolio chair of Labor, we could say as a union, they must now consolidate their media briefing on progress and the process so that you close in on a potential of another normal zero. Someone is going to take up the issue and claim to be a person who can trace their monies and pay them. And they would be expected to pay to that particular person the same exploitation that we have in the ex-mine workers. That when your compensation is due, somebody claims to be acting on behalf of you, just from the point of either ignorance or lack of information, that this person then takes a particular portion of your payment of compensation, because he claims to have worked for compensation. There must be a very clear and coordinated communication, particularly on public, so that this process of contesting in court for their salary to be paid, won by government and not by somebody, is clarified. And that the process of payment then is clarified so that people do not mobilize. Even some MPs are falling into this trap. One leader of an organization that was once celebrated, which is dying a natural death now.
But the
UN? No. the president of UTM was once active in this process of mobilizing ex-mine workers. That's purely for hopes. So this one must be closed so that everybody knows that there's a process that government is engaged on and that government cares and not individuals cares at the expense of government. That's the other one. So on this one of tracing, MTA could assist and trace us in this instance. On the one chair of the possible areas for amendment, I think that will work internally the union share with you, but we've already submitted a motion to COSAT that we must raise this issue to NEDLAC. But we will work both NEDLAC, your portfolio committee, and then the portfolio committee on trade and industry. It will not be a problem, Chair, to argue for that. But we think that Parliament must not be allowed. In fact, it must not be used by individuals for their greed and selfish needs, Chair. It must be used to stink where it matters. That's all. Questions?
Okay. Honourable members, as we have indicated, that there has to be another round on the discussions on this matter, given the fact that the main players are not here. Thank you very much for your briefing, Anyway. And we're closing now. You have a question?
Just a suggestion, Mr. Chair, for the next round, we do discuss this. In so far as it's possible, would it be not a good idea to get a single representative of all the government departments that are dealing on this to come and present to us? So there's one presentation rather than this piecemeal water, labour, DMR, even justice. Secondly, when the invitations are issued, can it be made clear to the people coming what is going to be expected of them when they come before this committee, for those that are going to present to us?
Yeah. Well, on your first suggestion, it's going to be extremely important. Because on labor issues, Department of Labor is directly responsible for the board. On mineral issues, DMR is involved. Now there's a new issue that has come out of water. You would need people who are playing a particular role in that particular situation. So unfortunately, we'll have to live with these different presentations done at the same time, because they're handling different matters as we have. There's no way that DMR would know what Department of Labor is doing on UIF, on compliance orders and other things. So it's not going to be very easy. On your second issue, yes. We will ensure that letters go out. For instance, the letter that went out to DMR was just saying that they must come and attend the meeting. And that's it. So they were not sure whether they are expected to make presentations. So you're right. People must be clear. In fact, in the closing off, we want to make clear that one, all entities that are here will have to prepare their submissions in writing, because there we want to see what progress has been made, what is the future situation regarding this matter, so that it can indicate to us whether there's a possibility of closure on this issue or not. Or it will also give us an indication of whether there's still more work that we need to do. because we hear that there are court cases that are going on backwards and forwards, even liquidations to some of these companies that are involved. For instance, there's a liquidation application that we read about in the media directed at Aurora, where Aurora said, we are not poor, we are not insolvent. It's just that it's that mining operation which went wrong. Otherwise, as Aurora, please don't liquidate us. But you read that from the media, and we would need the provisional liquidators to tell us exactly what is the situation. Because if they are not pleading poverty, then they must pay. It mustn't take court orders for them to be able to pay what is owed to workers. I think that's one issue. Secondly, is that I would want to check with you, Honorable Member. In our program, we're just simply, completely chock-a-block between now and the end of this term. It means we must choose a Friday. Set that Friday aside specifically for this matter. I'm looking at the 8th of June, if we agree. So that people who are here must know even here and now that we are expecting them back here on the 8th of June. Any problems that you foresee in that situation? Look at any other Friday, for instance, 13, 14, Friday the 15th, because on 13 and 14 we've got the workshop on the mining charter. So then Friday the 15th will then remain open for us. Is that it? So please diarise it, Department of Mineral Resources, Department of Labour, that on Friday the 15th, Jefferson, on Friday the 15th, we will then, 15th of June, we will then handle this matter. Is that not a future?
workshop. Why? Thank you.